You returned from pre-season, no Rangers that year. Did the boys in the dressing room take on what was happening over there, or was it? Did you just block it out?
Block it out, yeah.
Nothing to do with you?
Nothing to do with us, yeah. It was just still going on now. I mean, 5 years of carnage, really, isn't it? It's not been ideal from any stretch of the imagination, but from a footballer, for Celtic, our job was, first and foremost, qualify Champions League. Secondly, win the league. And then if you can add a trophy, cup, then, you know, you've ticked all the boxes.
Did you miss those games when they went
Yeah. Yeah, the ones, as soon as the fixtures come out, that's ones that you look out for, isn't it?
See the week building up to an Old Firm, is it brilliant? Do you get nervous before, do you get especially nervous before day games, or is it?
Not nervous, you can just tell there's an extra snap in your training. Everyone wants, you want to play, you want to be considered for starting 11. But it was, yeah, because you just knew how big they were, not just for yourself and your family, but for the fans, it was it was massive. It was the games that ultimately defined your career that people remember them moments against, you know, them opponents.
Celtic excelled in the Champions League that year. Was there a feeling amongst the boys that you could do well in Europe that year?
I think within the dressing room we knew we was all right if we all played at a level. But yeah, I think we performed really well in Champions League that year. That was the last 16, wasn't it? So yeah, I mean, Barcelona away, which any, you know, I think as a player you're going into that game thinking, please don't
get it done.
Yeah. And we conceded in the 91st minute. Got beat 2-1. That kind of gave us confidence that we can play at this level as long as Big Fraser turns up, because he pretty much kept us in it for long parts. And, you know, his reputation got bigger and bigger with every game that he played. And I think they called him the Great Wall, the Spanish press. Yeah, so he was sensational that year. But along with Victor Wanyama, Hoops, I think Mikel Lustig played really well that year. Izaguirre, you know, I think we had a real, real good group of players playing at the top of the game that year. Hence why we got to the last 16.
The Moscow game, 1-3-2. Yeah. Was that when you believed you could get out of the group? Or do you never really believe you could?
Well, it was only coming afterwards that, obviously, you know, when you're going through the press bit, they said that's the first away win for ages, like, you've not, I don't know, 15, 16 attempts, something like that, I think. You're like, oh, actually, we've done all right there. But you see that Moscow game as well, another ding-dong I had with Lenny. You know, whenever you're in your room just chilling out, you're thinking, right, okay, I'm just watching TV and the phone rings up. Chris, gaffer, yeah? Come up to my room now. What room are you in? 312.
I'm dropped.
Yeah, so it's like, right, okay, dove, coming in. Sit down. Right, thinking tonight, you're going to be on bench. What? Are you serious? Like, I've played all these previous games, done really well, score goals. I'm like, what? It's like, yeah, well, I'm thinking about do this, do that. I'm thinking pace, I'm thinking defence and this. He says, you'd have to play right midfield, not ideal for you, and this, this, and this. I said, Gaff, I want to play. Desperate. He says, what do you mean you're desperate? I says, I'm desperate, I'm itching to play. Gutted. Can't believe you even thought about dropping me. He went, right. Right, you play. But don't let me down.
Really?
Yeah, and then I walked out. I can remember thinking, I was first of all fuming that he'd even contemplated dropping me. Secondly, like thinking, oh no, please don't make a mistake now. So, no, and actually I pretty much played right back that whole game. And Lustig dug me out a few times. So yeah, I owe him a bit. But it was another part of the game that I had to learn defensively. And, you know, it was a great game to not only be a part of, but be on the winning side of and create that little bit of history for us.
And then the Barcelona game, what a night. Before the game, did you think you had any chance? Honestly?
No. I don't know.
No.
I mean,
does Lenny make you believe you have a chance, though? Is he good at the game? He's good at, is he?
He's the only person that would make me believe about beating them, yeah. You know, when he left the job at Celtic, I was one of the first things I texted him. Like, your motivational speaking, everything you said to me, whether you knew it or not, you're the only person that's ever actually made me believe that I could go on and beat a Barcelona. Do you know what I mean?
Well,
gave me that much confidence. And we beat Spartak Moscow that year at home as well. And I had to come off because I had a bad thigh injury. And I can remember him coming in and my thigh was like this. It was exploded. And I was having like this dressing being sorted out because I had stud marks there. And my missus was in the thing, she thought I'd broke my leg. And Lenny came in. And I had no idea at this time that we'd qualify for the last 16. Do you know what I mean? I thought, something had happened. And he came in and he grabbed me by the lock my face like that. He says, honestly, you don't know how good you are. And then gave me this big cuddle and then went away.
Brilliant, eh?
But yeah, it was a good moment. And it's one of them sort of things that I thought, you know what, yeah, I did. I felt good in that game against Spartak Moscow. I felt good.
Uh-huh. The Barcelona game, how was it playing them? Was it exhausting?
I think, you know, when you play at that level, and this is another thing that Neil Lennon always used to say, listen, you're going to get physically tired. That's inevitable. But it's the mental thing. You start getting cramp at 45 minutes, 60 minutes. You're thinking, this shouldn't be happening. But you're concentrating so much, it takes physically draining. We always used to say, listen, after 15 minutes, you're going to be breathing out your ring. Just wait for your second wind. Just relax. Stay in the game. Don't ball watch. You know, that sort of just be a unit, uh-huh. Look at the man outside and you know, work together. But it was just, I mean, in the tunnel, you're looking at Messi, you know, Xavi, Iniesta, Fabregas, Pique.
How good are they?
Oh yeah, they're just technically brilliant. Uh-huh. It don't matter what sort of pressure you put them under, they never give the ball away. Uh-huh. You see when you play against bad players or you play against average players, go and put them under pressure, see how good they are. Can they keep the ball? Can they manipulate the ball? Do they panic under pressure? You usually get that with poor players. When you put pressure on world-class players, World Cup winners, mm-hmm. Nothing. Yeah. Nothing fazes them.
You scored the winning goal that got Celtic through the penalty. Was that a nervous moment? Or
no, honestly, hands on my heart.
Do you love that moment to her?
I never knew that I needed to score that penalty to send us through.
All right.
Yeah.
But how good did that feel after it, knowing that it was your penalty that got them through?
Yeah, see, that was a good bit. But I knew I was going to go down the middle. But when I put the ball down, I can remember looking at the goalkeeper and his hands was touching the crossbar, like with bent arms. Uh-huh. And I thought, holy, he's a big guy.
Do you think he had the cricket pads on Stephen Bauer?
Big Bauer, yeah. But I just thought to myself, right, because I've missed a penalty down the middle when it's hit, I don't know, about that high, the feet. Uh-huh. So I literally had seen the crossbar, I thought, right, I'm going to aim for like that, 2 foot underneath the crossbar. That's my window there. A little bit lower, fine, but I do not want to get too over top on it and scuff it down the middle. And as soon as I hit it, I thought, wow, that feels a bit low underneath, you know what I mean, on your foot. And I remember looking up, aiming towards the crossbar. It always looked as if it was going to hit underneath, but when it bounced down, I thought, please don't come out. Or And then I had that, can I swear?
Yeah.
I was like, fuck, yes. And I didn't even celebrate. I was just like, me and big Charlie Mulgrew went running off. I was like, yes. And I was like, fine, but we were led to believe that Barcelona were beating Benfica, but they weren't, so we needed it. Uh-huh. Which is probably an hindsight, a good thing that I didn't know.
Around about that time you decided to quit Scotland, what was your reasons behind that?
The main reason was family. The second one, I was picking up injuries. I wanted to try and play for Celtic as long as possible. But yeah, I had, obviously my missus up here, no family, no kind of friends that we'd made, and with Celtic, I was travelling all over the world, Europe. We're in a hotel every single game we're in a hotel.
Even the home games,
yeah. So I was spending so much time away from my family, my kids, both my children after the stillborn were in intensive care for 10 days a week, so it was just
too much.
Yeah, and then my boy, he got bronchitis on New Year's, Christmas Day. So my missus spent 4 days in hospital on Christmas Day, Boxing Day, day after. Then we had games and it was just like, so yeah, they were in hospital and he had bronchitis, so they had chest infection and pneumonia. And I thought, you know what, it's time to wrap this and just be a dad, stay at home, uh-huh. Play football. But I think Scotland thing, an absolute honour for me to be a part of it. But yeah, there was a time when Gordon came in, when I wasn't even involved, I wouldn't play, and it was just, you know,
turning up.
Training, yeah, turning up, watching the games, and then on the phone to the missus, how's the kids, what you been up to, what's been happening today. And Lisa, obviously being, 26, 27, 28, she raising 3 kids on her own, so it was difficult for her.
See, if you were like a mainstay in that team, you were playing all the time, your decision would have been different?
If I were playing all the time, uh-huh. Possibly, yeah, because yeah. You do get a feeling of when you're part of something. Like I say, it was when Gordon came in, the old, you know, Craig Levein thing, George Burley thing. It weren't like Scotland were doing really well, hitting the heights. I think when Gordon came in, he brought an aura, a freshness to it. And I thought, you know what, I can relate to Gordon. I think he had the same sort of conversation with Neil Lennon when he retired. So, you know, Lenny were desperate for me to carry on, but I just thought I just want to, you know, take the international breaks to spend with my family and concentrate on Celtic.
Why do you think you never played more?
For?
Scotland.
I just think good quality of players.
Really, yeah?
Yeah.
So nothing to do with...
No, I don't think it had nothing to do with myself. You know, I think international managers always see it differently. Whether, you know, I didn't play every week for Celtic. You know, it's not... But Celtic's my bread and butter. I wanted to try and prove people wrong to get into Celtic team. Whereas Scotland, I just thought, how am I going to get in if all these are in front of me?
Mm-hmm. Your fourth season, you scored the goal to start the comeback against Big Andy Carrigandy in the Champions League. How much pressure did the team feel that night?
We always thought we was going to win. We got done with two kind of long throws over there, which, you know, they weren't a great side.
No.
We knew we'd create chances. I think it was vitally important to at least get one goal before half time. But we didn't really start the game well, I must be honest. We weren't playing great football. The goal obviously changed things around, then the atmosphere picked up. Big Georgios scored straight after half time. Anthony Stokes had a chance from about a yard. I think he hit the post. That was the only time I thought, ooh, maybe this is not going to happen. But yeah, how we won the game and the atmosphere and what it meant for going through was sensational. But we had, I remember leading up to the game, I think Gary Parker got the local paper and pinned it on the dressing room, and their manager was saying, you know, 95% through, it's done deal, we're fine. And then after the game, we later really realised that their manager had a plane booked to the Champions League draw that he had to cancel and get somewhere else for the Europa draw.
Brilliant.
Yeah, so that were all just...
Building up.
Yeah, that were all... Yeah.
You scored 32 goals that season.
Yeah.
Sweep the boards, player of the year.
Yeah.
Best season of your career.
I'd have to say so, yeah, goal scoring wise, yeah. It was just strange, just a whirlwind of goals. Always felt like I wanted to score. But not only score, I always thought I was going to get chances. And that was because we had a terrific team at the time. And yeah, I just felt confident going in every game. I've never been so fit, never been so determined. But yeah, 32 goals are some return. But again, you know, a lot of penalties, a lot of goals where you rely on that kind of instinct to get in places. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Tap-ins and stuff like that. So they weren't all proper worldies, but just hungry to score goals.
See, that position you played, was it always goals you were after? Were you always wanting goals?
No.
No?
No, goal. I think Kevin De Bruyne, I only seen him last week, that he said he enjoys creating goals better than actually scoring. So he loves the feeling of getting on the score sheet. He says, but actually threading through a nice ball and someone finishing it, or a little bit of magic that sets someone away, he gets more satisfaction, yeah. Which is all right when you strike a scoring goals, but if he keeps missing chances, you might start shooting from long range.
Are you surprised when Lenny said he was going to leave the club?
Yes. Yeah, I were very surprised. But obviously circumstances dictated it, that, you know, he'd lost his backroom staff, got told Ronnie Darla were coming in, so I think he just wanted to get away.
Did he speak to you before?
Mum?
No. Nothing, just came at the blue.
Just heard it, yeah. That's when I texted him. So just listen, I want to thank you for everything that you've done for me, personally. Then the thing that I just touched on in terms of him, not only motivational, but always gave me the belief that I could be anything I wanted to be and beat anyone that were on the park. So, but yeah, we always keep in touch.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Ronnie Dyla comes in. Mm-hmm. What were your initial thoughts when he first arrived?
Open-minded, yeah, just to see what he's like. I think pre-season went pretty well. We worked hard. John Kennedy and John Collins was there. I enjoyed both their company. Enjoyed the ideas that they had. Coaching was pretty good. It was just... it all were leading into a decent thing, because we was looking at trying to change things, and it gave me an insight to how he wanted to play the game and, you know, different side of things, you know, high press, having a controller in the middle of the park, you know, what Brian's doing now, Brendan Rodgers doing the high press, but it was getting the message across, and obviously the biggest year of that were fitness levels. You know, we couldn't maintain it.
Why not?
Diet were all wrong. Everything about the diet, everything about the off-field activities there. You know, there was a guy coming in saying you've got to be under 80 kilograms, which is fine if you're 81, but, you know, the lads were like 84, 85 kilograms, losing best part of a stone in weight, and then trying to play football. We we were going into games sometimes having lamb shanks, we were having whipped cream, strawberries, berries, no Lucozade, no Powerade, no carbs, no potatoes, literally salad and fat.
Would the boys say, would they say this isn't working or just get on with it?
Just get on with it, yeah. I mean, there were things laid on for you. There were pasta that you could have. But when you, I don't know, when you're being watched all the time, what you're eating, how you're living, what you're doing, you know, if your manager says you can't do it, you don't want to then undermine, yeah.
But would no one ever go on and say, like a couple of the older lads saying this diet's not for the boys, can we go back to?
Don't know.
No, you've never done that yourself now?
Well, I mean, I tried to follow it as much as possible. I've never been so thin in my life, but I couldn't run for shit.
Big Charlie said the exact same thing.
You for 60 minutes you felt great, and then again, like you're thinking, right, get some sugar and some glucose, get some Powerade, and then they're telling you to squeeze it in your mouth and then spit it out so you didn't take it in. But it was just, it was, yeah, right from, it weren't a Ronnie Dyler thing, it was everyone in and around him that influenced what he was doing. He didn't have the minerals for the job that was in hand. He felt too under pressure.
Was there a particular incident which you thought, I'm not his type of player?
I wouldn't say a type of player, it was just... I suppose you're better off asking him. Listen, I know what he wanted. He wanted a fit, athletic team that wanted to press high and have blistering pace and be organised, but there were too many off-field things that would have an effect on how he wanted us to play, so lads just couldn't do it. You know, I think when you look back at like Big Chico and Scott Brown, they looked finished, dead on the feet, couldn't get fit, didn't look fit. But then now you change a few training regimes, you change your diet, where you live. Brownie looks like he can go and play for another 4 years.
Your relationship seemed to be repaired halfway through. You signed a new deal.
Yep.
What brought that in?
He weren't keen at all.
Wasn't keen on you signing the new deal? Did he tell you that?
No, he just says he just didn't want to offer me the contract. The meetings that we had, he'd say you need to do this, so I'd do it. Then he'd swing ball and right now you can do this and then this and this. It was getting frustrating because I was actually playing all right and doing all right in games and doing everything that he said. I think he thought that he didn't want me there.
Did that not make you have second thoughts about signing the deal?
No, because I'm best club I've ever played for. I didn't want to go anywhere else. Family was settled, missus are settled, kids are in school. Everyone looks at the football side of things, are you happy? But for me, throughout my career, as long as my family's happy and they're around people that they want to be, then the football could take care of itself.
Yeah, scored a scream against Rangers in the League Cup final that year.
Yeah. Should have saved it, yeah. As soon as I hit it, I thought he saved it. He got like probably a quarter of hand on it. Yeah.
Lettuce wrists.
It was. But it looks all right on TV. I was glad how good it looked.
Did you find that game differently anyway?
No, you know what? That's a lot of build-up about that game. A lot of kind of pressure on us because we were expected to win. Rangers were going into it in like, listen, we're just going to try and
make a game of it.
Yeah. But it was probably one of the most dominant displays that I've played in against Rangers. I know we were in a 2-0, but it was going on 4-5. I think we had some really, really good chances. I think that was probably one of the games where I thought Virgil van Dijk is not just a Premier League player, he's right at the top.
How good was van Dijk?
Virgil is probably one of the best players I've ever played with. I've never known a guy so tall, so strong and technically good in all my life. But he came in for the first training session and he was that good, like, defensively. I can remember Neil Lennon looking at Gary Parker and saying he could play centre midfield, never mind, because he was just that good.
So comfortable with
the ball. So comfortable on the ball, awareness, and technically brilliant. Like, he knew intelligence, like, he could play a number 10, like, you know, being aware of what's around him and his body strength, and yeah, you just knew he had absolutely everything. There was nothing that he didn't have.
Was Wanyama the same? Did you think he would go and play at the top?
No, see, Victor's not technically great. He's a warrior. Victor's one that will just take the ball off you willy-nilly, get the ball, keep it simple, driving force, aerial threat from set pieces. But ask Victor to, you know, strike a ball. Yeah, you wouldn't. It doesn't look naturally technical, whereas Virgil van Dijk, you know, ball at his feet, free kicks, kicking balls. Yeah. Virgil was class above.
That next year, Celtic couldn't recapture the form. What do you think that was down to? Same again. Diet.
Yeah, I'd a year before, year after. Yeah, I think it was just another, probably players getting frustrated at what was going on.
Would you speak about that to each other, how boys being frustrated and stuff like that?
Of course, yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah.
But never raise it with the manager now?
The manager had too many people, too many bits and bobs. I mean, our go-to man was probably John Kennedy.
Right.
Because I think he knew what we were feeling, what we were like. But listen, from a John Kennedy point of view, he just wanted to try and make us better, coach us better, to try and raise issues up with a manager that's implementing them. As a coach, I think it's very difficult. And obviously, he's got to look after himself in terms of, you know, that's his boss, really. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it was difficult in the terms of that we weren't getting the results and we didn't feel fit. And it seemed like the people there were just doing things to tick boxes to make the people in the board seem like, oh, yeah, we're all fit. This is how thin they are. This is how much they weigh. Everyone's training every day. But really, it were all a smokescreen.
Obviously, he's had that big bust up when you came off against Mulder. Was that just
that weren't intended to Ronnie Dyler. I was first of all fuming that not I got brought off, but that we were getting beat. Second of all, I thought why? I want to try and score. I want to try and get us to win. The angry part was I thought that the manager made the decision, and I was angry with John Kennedy and John Collins for not actually saying something to him to do something different. But yeah, one thing I do regret in football.
Do regret it? Uh-huh.
Oh yeah, 100%, yeah.
Was there a bust up after it in the dressing room?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah, it was disgraceful, wasn't it? Uh-huh. Weren't normal, that weren't. Normal behaviour, for me anyway, like I said, been a pretty much model pro in terms of trying to help young kids and do the right things in football and be a role model, father figure. To be reacting like that in front of, obviously, your teammates and your fans, it were a disgrace.
Were you surprised when Ronnie left then?
No, because something had to change. Mm-hmm. Yeah, something had to change.
And were you excited when you heard Brendan Rodgers was coming?
Yeah, delighted. Albeit I'm on a hospital bed.
Uh-huh.
Mm. I think it were an appointment where you, once you heard it, you're like, nah.
Uh-huh.
Brendan Rodgers. Actually got you up and you thought, here we go. Now I've got a proper man in charge.
Uh-huh. Mm. Oh, that season was just ruined with injury, wasn't it?
Injury, yeah. Four epidurals in my spine and ended up with a back op, which we obviously touched base on early on in the conversation. So 4.5 months ago that was.
So how frustrating was that seeing that how good a manager he was and probably with the suit of the way you played passing the ball? That you couldn't really get out there and play for him?
Yeah, it'd have been absolutely ideal. But I think, see, Brendan, when he first came in and pulled me to one side, he said, listen, you've done all this for the club. Undoubtedly, you know, legendary status, which I think people throw that saying flippantly. But, you know, I think what Brendan was saying, what you've done in the last 6 years has been sensational, but I'm going to take it this direction. I'm not saying you're not in my plans, but I'm going to get the likes of Sinclair and Patrick Roberts. You know, we want like a James E. Forrest and Tom Rogic's coming in. And he just says, basically, if you want looking for first team football week in, week out with Celtic, then you might find it difficult, which was completely honest. But on the flip side of that, I did say, listen, I've been at Celtic 6 years. Not once have I ever thought I should be guaranteed starting 11 place. Do you know what I mean? Uh-huh. Especially pre-season, new manager coming in. So it whet my appetite to try and prove that I could get fit and to, learn a thing or two from Brendan, which I currently did, and I probably learnt more being injured because I've seen it from a different perspective. I think when you're playing and you're just involved in the playing side of things, but I was taking my coaching badges over that 12 months, and he was brilliant. You know, he said that, you know, I'm more than welcome if I wanted to go and watch Liverpool train, go and watch Chelsea youth team train, is there anything that he could help me with? So every single training session that he did, he was early in the morning, 7:30 in the morning, got all the sheets of paper, who's training, who's not training, the injured lads, wrote everything down on a sheet. This was every single day, and I managed to get hold of everyone and put in a folder.
Is that what makes him so good? His preparation, his man management?
I just think, yeah, everything. He ticks every box. I don't know what else you'd want from a coach. He's got, I wouldn't say he's an aura, he's got presence. But I think that's because of how well he has done. Mm-hmm. And he always treats you like a human being. He never shouts, really. Never really swears. But he's intelligent. It's sometimes difficult when... How do you raise an argument with someone that you know is probably better and more intelligent than you? Uh-huh. Do you know what I mean? Uh-huh. Not that I thought that I had an argument with him, but I just thought he just oozed class, top class.
You went to Hibs that season on loan. How did you find that?
It was good. I really enjoyed it. I mean, the level of football wasn't great, not from Hibs' point, but the teams that we played against, it was a real wake-up call. I think my first game away was Green Morton. Yeah, Great Morton. We drew 1-1. And I can remember Gaffer telling me I'm going to play number 10. I thought, oh, okay, ideal. And I spent the first 45 minutes just doing this.
So, Nick.
I'm like, wow. And I came in at half time. I said to the lads, I said, listen, just relax. Don't just keep shelling it up front. You know, you're not under pressure. Just keep the ball, pass the ball. Work. Obviously, I've been training with Celtic, so I'm thinking, just relax. I said, there's no chance I'm going to get on the ball if you just keep shelling it. And they said, listen, I'm holding my hands up. At first, I admit, I'm not comfortable on the ball. I thought, this is going to be a difficult
This is going to be a long time. Yeah.
But no, I thoroughly enjoyed it. Great bunch of lads. We had some funny times driving in. We had a little bit of a car school. And I can remember getting there on the first day, pulling on. I had a Range Rover Sport. I pulled in. And all the lads were giving it some shots. You know, we thought the gaffer's just come in, right? I was like, it's just a Range Rover. You know, this is, I don't know, is it a standard issue for a footballer in our days? Like, guys on our youth team have got Range Rovers. And they said, listen, we can put part of a car school if you want. Oh, yeah, I'll meet you at this junction. This is when the M8 was carnage. And we met there, and we met with James Keatings, who bought a Volkswagen Golf at the car auctions for 1,500 quid. He must have had 30 of them trees, you know, the... And I went dizzy in the car, windows down, like, cause there was so much air fresheners in there. And then we went round a corner, and his ball joint in the front right wheel nearly went. That tyre nearly came off. I said, listen, Keith, I'm not coming in your car again, mate. I can't do it. So Brian Graham, he said, listen, he says, I've had a problem with cars, so I'm going to go to car auctions, and he come back with a Volkswagen Passat, something like that, this big, long taxi.
Couple of Dell boys, isn't there?
Yeah. And it, yeah, well, as you can imagine, after them two journeys, I was then the designated driver.
How did it feel running at Celtic Park the last time in the charity game? Was it hard to take in?
It was good, yeah. But you know what? I think I'd had my fourth injection about 3 weeks prior to that. Or I'd had an episode where I thought, something's not right. But it weren't like a back issue. It's all sciatic pain. So
a hamstring and all that?
Yeah, glute, hamstring down to my ankle. It was murder. And 4 weeks prior to that, I'd had an episode. I said, well, got to have another injection or something's got to happen. So I'd done no training. I'd done literally just bedridden and going in and just doing like a wee cycle. And then I got asked to do it. And I said, listen, you're going to have to let them know like real last minute, because if I'm knackered, like I can't just go on a pitch and look. Didn't want to come off the pot like Tin Man, do you know what I mean? And I knew it was going to be a sellout. I knew the caliber of players that I had the chance to play with. So I jumped at the chance to do it. I said, yeah, I think I'm going to be all right. I loaded up on painkillers and anti-inflams and rubs. I actually came in after the warm-up because I thought I could feel something in my glute. Do you know what I mean? I was like, having this stretch, and I'm thinking, you know, at 34, I feel like I'm 54. Mm-hmm. But once I got going, I was like, all right. But yeah, 3 days after that, I was still in bed.
Well, you really?
Yeah.
Fans reception, he was...
Oh, it was sensational, yeah. But you know, I wish I had the chance to do it in a game. It was great that I got that opportunity to do that, so mm-hmm. It was ideal, yeah.
How would you look back at your time at Celtic?
Hopefully people just think I did all right for a 300 grand fee.
Mm-hmm. You definitely did that, mate. Plans for the future then? You're ripping up the telly with a big boy, date.
Oh, you can rip it up.
You enjoying the media?
I am, yeah, I do. I thoroughly enjoy it. It's hard work because you have to do a lot of prep.
Tell us a bit of it.
There's a lot of things that you you take for granted that you should, because you've been in football, you should know everything about everyone. So the people that we're interviewing, the people that we're meeting, you know, like I said, a lot of prep work. But I enjoy finding out about people, finding out what we can get from them, having a chat. And yeah, it's good. I prefer being in the studio on a weekend, giving my opinion on
games.
I think that's more natural for me, I think. So yeah.
What, you said you'd done your coaching badges, managing maybe?
You know what, pretty much every single manager I've worked for, I've always sensed as if I could do their job. Until Brendan came and I thought, I'm fucking nowhere near it here. But I think that was probably me being naive, thinking that it's all about possession games and just picking 11, but it's not. Hence why Brendan gets the big bucks.
And if that doesn't work out, mate, there's always a cricket, isn't there?
I've had enough of cricket. I'll be the beer man. Do you want to? There you go, get ready for another set. But no, who knows? Might still throw the boots on, who knows?
Fingers crossed. All the best, thanks very much, mate.
Thank you very much, much appreciated.